श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। स्टार्ट डायरेक्टली मंगलाचरण मॉर्निंग वी डिड। सो मॉर्निंग वी डिस्कस्ड एट लेंथ अबाउट सांख्य एंड एट लेंथ वी डिस्कस्ड अबाउट द थ्री सांख्यस एंड इज कृष्ण सांख्य, देवती कपिल सांख्य एंड असुरी कपिल सांख्य एंड वी अंडरस्टूड द डिफरेंस एंड वी एस्टैब्लिश्ड दैट हाउ though these three philosophies have the same name, but there is a difference between them, but still there is a distinct difference between the two Sankhyas, theistic Sankhyas of Krishna and Kapila, Devati Kapila and Asuric Sankhya. In Asuric Sankhya we started discussing that how he seems to be as if talking the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy of Satkarivada. He rejects the Arambhavada or Asatkarivada or Nyaya Vaisheshikas. And then he says that he gives reasons why I am accepting this. Because he gives the reason that there is always some influence of cause over the effect. Whatever effect you have in this world should be there in the cause. And he gives a lot of arguments, five arguments, to establish that how different effects are by different causes. So we show, we see in this world that every cause produces an effect and it should be manifest in the effect. Like the seed in the tree. And the seed in the tree, the seed, though the tree is not seen in the seed, but still, the seed has a potentiality to produce a tree. So many things he gives. And then we came to the point of how he talks. Where is my notes? It is here. Any extra is there, mornings? Yeah, morning notes. And we discussed about this chapter consists of this Sankhya consists of four chapters. That is a description of Prakriti, description of Purusha, and how they combine together, and again at the end how they liberate or they get divorced. Now Prakriti was discussed at length, saying that Prakriti is the source of this world. Prakriti is subtler than mind, intelligence. Nyaya Vaisheshika's atomic theory is totally rejected because atoms cannot make mind. And he also goes to establish five principles or five arguments how Prakriti should be accepted. And Prakriti is not matter, it is not material substance, it is not a conscious principle behind material substance, and it is not mind. That also we discussed. And coming back to the thing about Purusha. And it is made up of three modes. The interaction of the modes all we discussed morning at length. And dissolution of the world little bit we discussed regarding Prakriti. That how Prakriti, everything in the world dissolves into Prakriti. And then Purusha also we discussed. How Purusha is conscious and he is inactive. And without consciousness, what is the purpose of this world? Prakriti in itself is of no use, though Prakriti creates the world. For whom is this Prakriti creating? Though so Purusha has to be accepted. And every body has an individual soul. The argument is if somebody goes to sleep, everybody will go to sleep. If one soul dies, everybody has to die. If one soul is accepted in every body. So in this way, Sankhya talks about this Purusha and Prakriti. Now the third chapter of Sankhya. The third chapter of Sankhya involves how they combine. Purusha and Prakriti, they combine. In original Sankhya text of Kapila, you only have when Purusha and Prakriti combines. He doesn't say why they combine and all. Just when. Why they combine, how they combine, No answer. But the commentators, they have answered. They have, because people objected, so there are two objections came by the Vedantists and other scholars. One objection, how can two such different and opposing principles cooperate? Means how they combine. What is the interest that inspires them to interact with one another? These are the two questions which was raised. Then in the Sangha Karikavali of Ishwara Krishna, he answers this. It has come 3-4, there are only two questions, but 3-4 is the answer actually. They make it answer for one, answer for two. Now, the Sankhya replies, just as a blind man and a lame man, you see, the blind man and lame man, they cooperate with each other. So, like Prabhupada gives the example, India is a lame man and the West America is a blind man. When they cooperate, you can conquer the world. That's how Prabhupada did. Now, in this way, he gives the same example of Andha Pangu Nyaya. This Andha Pangu Nyaya. Pangu. Andha Pangu. Pangu means lame. So, they use this Nyaya. Andha is a blind man. Like Prakriti is unconscious but active. He is like a blind man. Whereas Purusha, the living entity, according to our Sankhets, is what? It is conscious but inactive. So the unconscious and active Prakriti and conscious inactive Purusha, they can cooperate like a blind man and a layman. And now, they give another example. How? Milk to curd. You see, the milk becomes curd. The same way, Prakriti becomes this world. When you add some acid to the milk, it will become curd. So, you don't require anything. Just automatically. Sometimes, you find that you just need the milk. Milk becomes curd. Automatically. And then the other example he gives is this thing. Grass to milk. See, grass becomes milk. Cow eats the grass and becomes milk. So you don't require any guard for this in between. Camel carrying saffron. You see, camel is carrying saffron. And magnet attracts iron. These are the examples generally they give. Most common examples, and there is no Sankhet who can give more examples than this. And now, in this class we are trying to do both the rest part of Sankhet and refutation also. The Vedantists argue, my dear Sankhet, the blind man and the lame man. Now, the blind man and the lame man, both are conscious. But in your case, Prakriti is not conscious. Purusha is conscious. So, two conscious people can cooperate. No. Then they say, no, you just see, the milk and curd. Okay, milk and curd. The problem is, milk and curd, both are unconscious. And also, milk doesn't become curd automatically. Some substance has to be put by somebody. Some sorting has to be put. Okay, you may say, no, it automatically becomes, you just leave without anything, it also becomes. Then make curd from water. Because according to the Sankhya, their own philosophy, specific cause leads to specific effect. Now, according to your own principle, you are defeated. No. You see, grass and cow. Now they say grass is unconscious, cow is conscious. Now we give example. Again, the same fallacy is there. Grass and cow. Why don't you feed a grass to the bull? Produce milk. So this is how the Vedantists argue. And the camel and the saffron. Oh, saffron has been carried by the camel. Saffron is produced in the desert in Rajasthan and some other places. And now, camel is carrying, just see. No. There is an intention. Somebody ordered for the saffron. and somebody put the saffron on top of the camel and is loading and doing all these things. Magnet and iron, but again these two are unconscious. So their examples are all refuted. And if you meet a typical Sankhyate, you will find them speaking one of these things to prove that God is not required or God is not intervening between the Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha and Prakriti, they meet each other for mutual convenience. Some Sankhyates, they say, Prakriti wants Purusha to interact with him so that he will understand that I am the cause of misery. So the material nature wants. Then the argument is, wants means he is conscious. So many arguments goes on and on and on. It's like, now what is their purpose? Prakriti requires the presence of Purusha. It's there in the second question. See, Prakriti requires the presence of Purusha in order to be known and appreciated. Known or appreciated. And Purusha requires the help of Prakriti in order to distinguish itself from Prakriti and thereby realize himself. Realize liberation. You are already liberated. And now you require Prakriti to realize that I am different from Prakriti. So in this way, these two objections, they are, when these two objections, when it came, these examples and all were not given by the original Kapila. The commentators, they try to cover up. When they try to cover up, they are not as intelligent as Kapila. Original Kapila. Atheistic Kapila. See, you require some good intelligence to cover up something. Original Kapila, he knew that these questions are going to come. So he did not touch it. He did not touch it. So he just said, when these two things come together, so they ask why, then if you really inquire, then Krishna has to be there. He has to bring God in picture. So, when the more you try to cover up what Kapila did, and this is what happens to these commentators. Now, okay, accepting Kapila, whatever he said is okay. Now, Purusha and Prakriti came together. When Purusha and Prakriti came together, what happened? Purusha plus Prakriti gives rise to Mahat. Tattva or Buddhi. I told I'll bring the chart, but you know, I was so lazy, so cold. And also I saw the printer pages are not there. Anyway, I cannot take print out, so I'll not make it. I tried to make half of it, and hey, it's not a big chart. You can easily understand. Make a chart within your mind itself. I'll try to explain the chart as according to our found in the Bhagavatam. First, there is something called pradana. This pradana is unmanifested state of modes of nature. Now, this pradana becomes, next level is that prakriti. So, this prakriti is a state where now Krishna wants the creation to happen. Then it's actually called prakriti. Other is called pradana. It is just one thing only. But only it is like prasadam in the kitchen and prasadam on the plate. That's all. Now Krishna is ready now to start the creation. And that's called prakriti.
Prakriti is unmanifested.
Prakriti is manifested sometimes. Oh, it's not. Prakriti has not manifested. It is only one thing called in two ways. Pradana is when the entire world is unmanifested. Now, the same thing, when Krishna wants to create, he looks at Prakriti. He actually looks at Pradana, but that is, when he looks at Pradana, we don't say, he looked at Pradana. We say, he looked at Prakriti. Saikshata. Now, this is where the Sankhyates and Vaishnavas differ. The Vedantists differ. When Krishna looked at Prakriti, there is no Krishna for them and there is no acceptance of time energy and the Shiva Shakti in from two eyes of Mahavishnu. One eye, the Jiva Shakti is coming out and from other eye, the Kala Shakti is coming. both of them, actually what happens, they combine together near Prakriti and they take a form called Shambhu. Yes, Shambhu Tabita Samupeti Karyat. That is where Shambhu manifests. And these things the Sankhets don't agree. Now, when there is time energy entering into Prakriti, what happens is, in this Prakriti, there is agitation. It is the golden egg form, Hiranyagarbha, golden egg. And that is known as Mahat Tattva. And this Mahat Tattva, it produces the first thing called Ahankara. First thing which is manifested is Ahankara. Mahat Tattva. Or at the individual level, this Mahat Tattva is Buddhi. Sometimes, along with Mahat Tattva, Buddhi is also there. This cosmic intelligence. Mahat Tattva is nothing but the cosmic intelligence. At the individual level, it is called Buddhi. Now, this Ahankara. When Ahankara is projected through mode of goodness, mind is created. It is projected to mode of passion, then the senses, working senses and the knowledge gaining senses are created. When the Mahat Tattva is projected through the mode of ignorance, the Panch Mahabhutas and the Tanmatras are created. So, altogether there are 24. What are the 24? Everybody knows. There are 10 senses, 5 working senses, 5 knowledge gaining senses. And there are 5 Panchamahabhutas and 5 Tanmatras. That becomes 20. And you have this mind and you have the false ego, Ahankara is there. And Mahatattva, that Buddhi is there. Ultimately, Pradhana is there. Pradhana, which is the unmanifested state of modes of nature, that is known as Pradhana. So in this way, there are 24 elements. In the same way, Sankhya also talks about 24 elements. The difference between the atheistic Kapila's explanation of the creation and the Vedantic explanation of creation is, here Kapila does a big mistake. He says when Purusha and Prakriti come close together, Dikkala Desha Bhyam. Dik means directions, Kala means time, and Desha means space. He says, time is created. Directions are created, space is created. No. This, especially time, from which actually the space is also created, is energy of Krishna. It doesn't belong to the material world, one thing. Like Krishna doesn't belong to material world, time doesn't belong to material world. Time doesn't belong to it. It is energy of Krishna. It comes directly from the eye of Vishnu. Otherwise, how will the material world manifest? The material world manifests only because of time energy. That is why, Kalosmi, I am time. So as yesterday I have told, Nyaya Vaisheshikas, they don't talk much about time. And their commentators said, oh, time is manifested by atom interaction of atoms. And that is where the Vedantists go and hit. Vedantists or Vaishnavas, they cannot hear time is a product of matter. They cannot hear this. Time is an energy of Krishna. So Purusha Prakriti, they combine together, they become Mahat. Now, there are 8 features of Buddhi. That is what he says. What are they? Dharma, Jnana, Vairagya, Aishwarya. And these are the first four, which are Sattvika. And other 4 are there. They are ignorance. That is Ajnana, Adharma, Ajnana, attachment. What is avairagya? It's not avairagya. Asakti. And imperfection, that is known as aneshwarya. I don't know. Okay, anyhow, these are some of the aspects of Buddhi. Now, when from Mahat Tattva, then Ahankara comes. Then ahankara is of three kinds, sattvika, rajasic and tamasic. Ahankara, when it is sattvika, 11 senses arise from the sattvika ahankara. Now there are some people who say 11 senses arise from sattvika, some people who say only mind arises. So it is a little bit confusing here, no problem. And the five senses and the mind, they are all arising from the sattvika. Five tanmatra, the subtle elements, arise from tamasic ahankara. The function of rajas ahankara is to motivate other two gunas, and thus it is a cause of both aspects of creation, the 11 senses and the 5 tanmatras. So in this way they explain. In the bracket I have written, some state that the mind is the only sense derived from sattvika ahankara, and other 10 senses are derived from rajasic ahankara, and that the 5 subtle elements are derived from tamasic ahankara. So some say like this, some say like this. So it doesn't matter much to us. Now, after these things are manifest, these things are explained, there is a paragraph here which talks about how sound, ether, which came first, nobody knows. Whether ether came from sound or sound came from ether, this is a big argument, isn't it? So the Vaishnava Acharyas, they don't much talk about it, but still, some places it is explained, the sound comes from ether. Some places it explained, ether comes from sound. But ultimately, they are like twins. And who came first? It's not a big discussion. Sound and ether, they are like twins, isn't it? Because the subtle form of sound is ether. The subtle form of ether is sound. A subtle form of air is touch. Subtle form of fire is form. The subtle form of water is taste. The subtle form of earth is smell. So this is a Vedantic view of these tanmatras. We say they are the object of senses, but the Vedanta sees them as the subtle forms of these things. Now when the Vedanta says there is for I, through I we see the form. When the Vedanta talks about I, it is not talking about the sense instrument called I. The senses are there. We have five senses. People say, oh, I've got five senses. What are they? The children are taught. Five senses are, one is ears, and then the touch is there, eyes are there, the nose are there, the tongue is there, the nose is there. But the Vedantic understanding, the Sankhya understanding of these things is, it is not the eye which they are talking about. It is not the ear, this ear. This is this ear, the thing which you see, it is only a sense instrument. The actual ear is the subtle ear which they are talking about. When we say eyes or the senses, it is only eyeball, it is not the eye. When you say tongue, this is only the tongue is a sense instrument. But the real tongue is actually in the mind. It is actually it's subtle. So these things have to be understood. Okay, first we'll see what is there written here. First of all, there is the tanmatra, that is the essence of sound, shabda. From that shabda, ether comes. Akasha comes. The space element is derived. Thus, the space element contains the quality of sound, which is perceived in the ear. The air element is derived from the touch, and with combines to the sound, and the touch combines with the sound. Therefore, the air element contains the attribute of sound and touch. Although touch is the special quality of air and is sensed by the skin, the fire element is derived from the color or rupa. Rupatan Matra. It combines the quality of sound, touch and color, and its special property is sight, which is sensed by the eye. The water element is derived from the essence of the taste, Rasatan Matra, and all three preceding qualities, sound, touch, color are formed in as well its special qualities, taste, which is there sensed by the tongue. The essence of smell, Gandha Tanmatra, produces the earth element, whose special property is water, which is sensed by the nostril. This grass element contains all the four previous qualities along with its own quality, that is smell. So earth contains all. So this is explained very nicely in our Bhagavatam, third canto. So you don't have to go and then break your head with this. It is very simple to understand. You have tanmatras, you have first is ether. And you have sound and you have ether. Now what happens is, first it is here, in this it is mentioned, first to evolve in the tanmatras is the essence of sound, from which in turn ether, akash comes. So from sound, akash comes. So akash has only sound in it. And from akash, what is coming? The next tanmatra is coming. What is the next tanmatra? Air. Touch. From touch, air comes. So in air, what is there? Touch is also there, as well as sound is also there. In this way, go on zigzag like this, you will find ultimately what is there. In the earth, you will find all five. So this is how the world is created. Now, this is all explained in the Sankhya. They go to a very deep extent to talk about these things. Now, where is afternoon's paper? Now, I give something to staple. Hmm? I give something to staple to you. Distributed? Okay. I want one. Yeah, you could not get.
Which one do you
want? Which talks about, pratyaksha, their concept of pramanas.
The sources of getting
knowledge. Yeah, the sources of getting knowledge or something like that.
The sources of knowledge.
You can. Yeah. That I have. So two can share. I made, I think, 10 copies out of it. Huh? 10 copies came out. That's what the thing. Hey, two can share. How many of you received this thing, the sources of valid knowledge? How come only this much have come? I made 10. So two can share one. You don't have, Mataji? Now you have it. Okay, you can. So you have one? Not even one? Okay, I'll try to explain. Now, pramana. Sankhets, they also have pramana. They accept three pramanas as we also accept. What are the three pramanas?
Pratyaksha
and Shabda. Very good. So, Sankhya philosophy accepts only three independent sources of valid knowledge, that is, pratyaksha, perception, Anumana, inference, and testimony, that is Shabda. Of course, included within these are the sources of knowledge such as comparison, postulation, and non-cognition, etc., etc., which are therefore not recognized as separate source of knowledge. The Sankhya accept concept of perception, pratyaksha. See, Sankhyaites, they just don't call perception. They go very deep into the perception and they explain the whole technology of perception. Whereas Nyaya Vaisheshikas, they just say perception, that's all. Perception means pratyaksha. Now they go into so deep analysis and then they say the person who is perceiving is actually the intelligence. It is not the eye which is seeing. It is not the ear which is hearing. It is not the skin which is touching and understanding. It is actually the intelligence which is, which Prabhupada says, next door neighbor of the soul. That is the thing which is immediately manifested. The first thing to manifest is tamasa buddhi, which is also called mahatattva. At the cosmic level it is called tamasa buddhi. Just now I told. And at the individual level it is buddhi. And this tamasa buddhi which is expands into everybody's mind as intelligence. That is a thing which is very, very dangerous. That is the cause of our bondage in this world. See, the soul is next to the soul, this tamasa buddhi is sitting. So this tamasa buddhi, what it does? It perceives everything and then tries to use that everything for sense gratification. That is why this buddhi is called tamasa buddhi. So by our sadhana and all these things, we purify the intelligence. So anyhow, in the Sankhya philosophy also, they say what actually is perceiving is actually buddhi. It is not the eye which is seeing. Because everything which we see or gather, the knowledge gathered by the senses, it goes through the mind and to the intelligence. And that intelligence again reflects it back through the mind, through the senses and to the object. Like for example, in the physics also, they say that I am able to see. I am able to see, say, the fan. They say the light rays go and then come back. So until unless that happens, you cannot see an object. I don't know how many of you studied this lenses and eyes and this thing, physics, they talk about it. So these Sankhyas, they say, actually it is a buddhi which actually perceives the entire process of reflection. So some of the Sankhya commentators, they explain this to such an extent, they say that it is the intelligence which is seeing. So you have to perceive everything through your intelligence. It is true also. You have to perceive everything through intelligence. Otherwise, perception doesn't have any value. Even Anuman is later. Some people may confuse with Anuman. No. Even perception requires intelligence. And they go to a very great extent in explaining how the Nyayavaisheshika's understanding of perception is limited. And our understanding of perception is very wonderful. So let us see how they explain this perception. The Sankhya concept of perception as a source of valid knowledge is different from those poised by the system, other systems of Vedic philosophy. In Sankhya, valid knowledge means a definite and unerring cognition that is illuminated or made known by the self through its reflected light in buddhi. The mind, intellect and senses are unconscious material elements and therefore cannot perceive or experience any object. For perception or experience, now here, according to Sankhya, perception means actually experience. When I see something and you don't experience, you are not seeing it. Until unless when you see something and experience it, you actually not seen it. That's what they say. Like Krishna says, paschan napi na paschati, something like that. So it is not just seeing, it is seeing through the intelligence. Now going further. For perception or experience, consciousness is needed. And consciousness belongs only to the self, the soul. But the self cannot directly apprehend the object of this world because the self is nishkriya, meaning motionless or without motion, without action. Without motion or activity, apprehension is not possible. So if consciousness alone could apprehend the objects of the world, then because of the self is infinite and ever-present, one could know all the objects of this world, but this is not the case. So now here, they go to a very extent, very great extent to prove that the soul, it cannot perceive without intelligence, mind and senses. Now if we accept the soul can perceive, here they err. According to them, the soul is all-pervading and all-knowable. If the soul can perceive independent of the senses, then the soul can know everything. That is not the case. So in this way they say that intelligence, mind and senses They are the instruments for the soul to perceive this world. Now, going further. The self knows objects only through the mind, intelligence and senses. True knowledge of external objects is attained when the impression of the object is perceived through the senses and reworded in the intellect, which then reflects the light of the consciousness onto those objects. Just see, it's a very intricate thing. I'll try to make it more visualizable or something like that. Say, for example, there's an intelligence here, and behind that there is a soul. Now, what happens is, I'm looking at the fan. The impressions of the fan are first caught in the subtle eye. Through the subtle eye, it is sent to the mind. And through the mind, it is sent to the intelligence. And the intelligence gives that impression some light from the consciousness. And that light is passed back again through the mind and the senses to that object. Then only perception happens. So they complicate the entire thing. And it is true also. Even the Vedantists accept this thing. Even Vyasa accepted this thing. Vyasa, he has commented on the Yoga Shastras. Nyaya Vaisheshika Sankhya. And these three sutras Vyasa did not touch. Whereas, Yoga Sutras written by Patanjali, Vyasa himself gave a commentary. While giving commentary, defeated him. Commentary is supposed to explain it. But Vyasa, what he did? He gave a commentary to Patanjali Yoga Sutras and defeated by the commentary. It's a very special commentary. Somebody says, I want to give a commentary on your book. The commentary should explain it. But Vyasa, intelligently, what he did? He did the commentary and defeated the same sutras. So while commenting on the Yoga Sutras, Vyasa accepted this theory of Sankhya's theory of perception. In the Vedanta Sutras, he doesn't mention it. But Vyasa's commentary on the Yoga Sutras accepts this whole technology. Just imagine Sankhya's code, such a deep analysis of what actually perception means. In a very practical understanding, it is the perception, observation, which gives us knowledge of anything. We call that boy or that girl, that person intelligent when he is able to observe very minutely everything. The power of observation, it is a key for learning. It's a key for learning. So this whole thing is actually explaining the learning process, observe, everywhere, observation, keen observation. How the child learns, the observation. And what happens? He is this thing. This is what happens. He perceives, goes to the senses, goes to the mind, goes to intelligence. And intelligence, we put some consciousness. I don't know how they use this part in English or not. In Kannada language, or even in Telugu, suppose, for example, I'm walking, and the table is there, or okay, I just kick it and go away. I just don't bother about it, like a buffalo. I just walk. I'm seeing everything. I just go away. Then, the word which is used, I'll try to translate in English. They say, have you not given consciousness to it? That is what they say. Have you not given consciousness to it? That means you are seeing, and it is there in your eyes, it is there in your mind, but you are not given consciousness to it. Even in the normal language, they use this thing. So this is what happens. Until and unless consciousness is given to the impressions which are absorbed to the senses, perception is not complete. We'll put this in this way. That is more palatable. until unless consciousness is given to the impressions gathered through the senses, the perception is not complete. That is why the summary of this thing. So the impressions of such as chair, it is not hair, it is chair. In the notes, just make it mind, it's chair, comes within the range of vision. There is a contact between the chair and the eyes. The impressions of the chair is produced in the eye. Impression is then analyzed and synthesized in the mind. Through the activity of the mind, the intellect becomes modified and transformed into the form of the chair. The predominance of sattva in the intelligence enables it to reflect the modifications of the chair in the self. It is then reflected back to the intelligence. Thus, the conscious intellect, which is modified by the object chair, becomes illumined into a conscious state in which perception is possible. Just as mirror reflects light of a lamp and therefore illuminates other objects, so the intelligence of the unconscious principle reflects the consciousness of the self and recognized object. So, to give you a simple example, unconscious person, even if he sees, he cannot see. The eyes are there, mind is there, everything is there. So this is how unconsciousness and consciousness is explained in the Sankhya. Of course, within that there are two kinds of things. One is Vijnana Bhikshu and Vachaspati Mistras, explanation of these two things. And we will not talk about these two things, just avoid it. In that, there is only one line which I would like to mention. This theory of reflectionism is also accepted by Vyasa in the commentary of Yoga Sutras. The last line of the third paragraph. You can note it. The theory of reflectionism is also accepted by Vyasa in the commentary of the Yoga Sutras. Now, according to the second view of Vachaspati Mishra, no, I don't want to do this thing because we don't want to complicate so much. Wherever it is necessary, we'll try to complicate. Go to the next aspect.
What happens to the blind person? I mean, actually blind.
Ah, very good. This is a question. What happens to the blind? How a blind person sees? He doesn't have the eyes, but still he sees. Sees. So because actually the seeing is done because the impressions which are carried into the consciousness are mixed with the consciousness. That is why you are able to see. Okay, forget about all blind person. There's a cow has a hand and hand. Cow has a hand. How many of you say cow has a hand? What do you do with the hand? I give something, you take it with the hand. You give something to the cow, how does it take? The hand is in the mouth. You say, what is it? Oh, hand is not in the mouth. The hand is in the mouth means the functionality of the hand. He is in the mouth for a cow. Even an amoeba has all the five senses. All the senses are present. So it is not the senses which is important. It is the consciousness which is actually perceiving. It can perceive through anybody. Like for example, you are sitting and somebody goes this way. You are not seen, but still you can perceive. By sound, or some intuition, or something like that. So this is how Sankhya goes very deep in analyzing the activities of this world. So that's why Sankhya became very famous in even household affairs became famous. As I told in the native languages, they use a lot of Sankhya. Even in normal languages, they use a lot of Sankhya. In normal languages. Which we use, which of course, not now, but a few years back, a lot of Ayurveda is also used. Like when we are kids, when we are playing, suppose there is a fat boy, and he's not able to lift even a simple thing. We used to say, "Arey, iske andar hawa bhara hai, do jabad maar ke nikalo na." We say that he is filled with air only, and if you just give two blows, the air will go away. Actually, those who have vata constitution, either they become very thin or they become very fat. The children use this thing. They say, you see, hawa bhara means he's got more air in him. Means vata is more in him. And the only way to get rid of vata is when he becomes excited. So you give two snaps to him, he'll get excited and become slim. So, lot of Sankhya, lot of Ayurveda is actually found in your normal conversational language. But these days, unfortunately, neither they know English, these boys and girls, neither they know native language, they forgot. They neither speak good English, neither they speak good Kannada or Telugu or Gujarati or Hindi. They don't do that. On the name of convent education, they go to big schools, they go to Cambridge, they go to that school, this school, and they don't know. If you tell a boy, what is 20 into 23? Let me take a calculator. I still remember. You know, I 40, 50 into 50 means 50 tables. It's, you know, the tables, we call it tables, mathematics. If you don't remember, even a teacher would ask, 42 into 53, 42 into 46, you should be able to tell. You should have memorized that. Otherwise, they would beat. That was the thing. Now just see, it's all gone. Even native languages have this thing. So this kind of understanding. Let's go further. In the last, Sankhya recognizes two kinds of perception, indeterminate and determinate. The first is known as alochana, and which means mere seeing the object. It arises from the moment of contact between the senses and sense objects, and is antecedent to all mental analysis and synthesis of sensory data. In this state, there is recognition of object as mere something, without any recognition of its specific object. Determinate perception, in contrast, is the result of analysis, analytic analysis, synthesis, and interpretation of sensory data of the mind by the mind. This type of perception is called vivechana. And this is a very common word used in household. Vivechana means to really see things as they are. Meaning, interpretation of the object, because it is the determinate cognition of an object as a particular indefinable thing. Particular identifiable thing. Okay, now this is about perception. Let us go to inference. What these Sankhya's talk about inference. Inference, according to them, is very simple. I will not read through the entire thing. They say, inference means to correlate between two perceptions. Minimum two perceptions. When you have two perceptions, how you correlate with them, that is called inference. Simple. It is not. So, perception itself, they have analyzed so much. Inference, they did not talk much about it. They said, just say to correlate between. Like you see, some people say, it's an exercise which through which the teachers, the olden teachers used to teach. Old days, the teachers used to teach. It is, they never used to really read the textbook and put something on the board, and they used to sit. And then they would ask something, some question. And somebody would ask say answer to it. And then they would say, okay, do you know something like that? They would just go on asking questions and trying to develop knowledge within the class. This is also accepted in the modern methodology of teaching, where inference or the anumana is a very wonderful methodology for making people learn. For example, say somebody knows what in a class. I'll give you a simple example. How many of you know what a dough is? Dough. Some people say, yes, I know. And somebody say, I don't know. Okay, you call that person. One person says, who knows? So one person says, don't know. You ask the person to explain what a dough is to the other person. Then this person says, the dough is like it's a bird. Then this person says, that's a bird. What kind of bird? And this person says, it's like a pigeon. Acha? What is the difference? In this way, there is so much of cognition going on between the both. And ultimately, oh, it's like a pigeon. It has a tail. It's white. In this way, the pigeon and the doe is different. At the same time, it's like a pigeon. It's white, having a long tail. White is used. Then, say, in earlier days, there was no communication. These does are very expert in communicating. They exactly go to a place where you want them to go, if you have trained them nicely. You want to write a letter, you tie a letter, and tie it to the tail of the doe. The doe would fly and give the letter to a person. I say, is it so? And both of them will go and say it. So in this way, the cognition is going on so nicely between these two students. Everybody in the class knows about it. And they also know about it and they want to forget it. So when Sankhya talks about inference, getting knowledge through inference, it is relating two perceptions, minimum. So, dough is not known by this student, dough is known by this student. And how this student is explaining this? This student knows a bird, this student knows a pigeon, this student knows what white is, knows tail is, knows letter is. So put all of them together, then the cognition is proper, then the knowledge is proper. So this is how the traditional Gurukul teachers used to teach children. Traditionally, this is how in this land teaching used to go on. Inferential knowledge, that is very, very strong in the mind. We'll never forget it. Okay. Testimony, Veda has to be accepted. That is, as told by these Sankhya Nyaya Vaisheshikas. And one thing with the Sankhyas is they talk about perception, they talk about inference. They say that Veda is the Pramana. Veda is the Pramana. Veda has to be accepted. If your perception and inference doesn't match with the Veda, you cannot accept it. In Nyayas, even Veda and inference, or testimony and inference, Anuman and Shabda, they should confirm with Pratyaksha. In Vaisheshikas, what is the problem? Pratyaksha and Shabda should confirm with Anuman. But now here, whatever Pratyaksha and Anuman, you may say, you may infer very nicely, you may perceive things very nicely, but it should be Veda Vakya. In one sense, these people have advanced. Sankhyates. And that's how it becomes very easy for the Acharyas to defeat Sankhya. Because they say, Acharya, yours Veda is the final verdict? Now, you are speaking something which is totally against the Veda. So that is why it took only one verse, one sutra for Vyasa to say these Sankhyas are non-Vedic. Where it took about 3-4 sutras to explain that how these Nyaya Vaisheshikas are non-Vedic. Because I say, Veda is the final word. If Veda is the final word, Veda talks it. You are not talking the same thing. Enough. Reject. In one sutra itself, in the other page I have given, one sutra is rejected. Now the fourth chapter, liberation came. very interesting chapter. According to Sankhya philosophy, the universe is full of pain and misery. And even what is thought as pleasure is mingled with sorrow, because of all pleasures ultimately end in disappointment, which is the basis of misery. It is natural inclination of living entity to rid themselves of pain and misery, but Sankhya states that this can be achieved only through the correct discriminative knowledge of reality. So that is why these Sankhyas are generally known as jnanis. The jnanis, they rely on so much of discriminative capacity, on their intelligence. Discriminative capacity. If you either say Sankhyat or a jnani, both are same. Please, they are not jnana yogis. As soon as you put the word yoga, Krishna is there. Because yoga means connecting with Krishna. So they are just jnanis. They are not jnana yogis. Jnana yogis are different. Sukadeva Goswami. They are jnana yogis. There is Brahman realized. Because yoga is some connection with Brahman. Some connection with the Supreme Lord. But here there is no connection with the Supreme Lord. They are just jnanis. They know how the material world functions very nicely. That's why they are called jnanis. And whatever you find these days outside of PhDs or physics, mathematics, and PhD in chemistry, zoology, botany, and they are big professors, they are all ajnanis only. So they know how the matter functions very nicely. Sankhya yoga stages can be achieved only through discriminative reality. The entire external world and the internal phenomena belongs to Prakriti, but pure consciousness Purusha is free from limitations of space, time and causation. All activity, change, thought, feeling, pain and pleasure belongs to body, mind, organism, not to the self. The self is ever pure, conscious, ever illuminated consciousness that transcends the entire phenomenal world, including the body, mind complex. The self has body, but the body is not the self. In the same way, the self has a mind, ego and intelligence, but it is quite distinct from these. Pleasure and pain, virtue and vice, merit and demerit do not color the pure self. It's all what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. It has got nothing to do with the self, nothing to do with the soul. They color the intellect as it becomes involved with its surroundings. All the experience of the phenomenal world are received by Purusha because of its false identification with the mind, intelligence and ego. We all talk the same thing. Same. The intellect is responsible for all experiences. But whatever Purusha ignorantly identifies, whenever Purusha ignorantly identifies itself with the intellect, it thinks its experience as an intelligent intellect does. Even though Purusha is actually always and forever beyond the evolutes of Prakriti. The soul is beyond Prakriti, but still he is identifying. Prabhupada talks about the same thing. The manifestation of the universe into the 23 evolutes of Prakriti is not meant to create bondage for Purusha, but rather to help Purusha realize that it is free and distinct from Prakriti. Although it may seem that the external objects are meant for physical, mental, internal enjoyment, that is not really the case, because the mind, ego and intelligence do not function for themselves. They exist to provide experiences to Purusha. Now here, when we come to that refutation, we'll talk about it. The Vedantists laugh at the Sankhya theory. And they say, if Purusha knows that this whole world is misery, why in the first case he got into entangled with this? That is what they talk about. Feeling of pain and misery are experienced because Purusha falsely identified with Rajas and Tamas and forgets his capacity to see through his false identification. Thus also, Purusha fails to use Prakriti's sattvic manifestations as efficient instruments for discriminating the self from non-self. Now here again there is a flaw in there. The flaw is, they think by sattvic intelligence one can get liberation. But ours is not so. Sattvaguna is a platform on which you attain liberation, not the means of liberation. It's a notable point. Sattvaguna is a platform. Definitely one has to be situated in mode of goodness. Like Prabhupada writes in the introduction to Upadeshamrita. By following Upadeshamrita's first few principles, you will come to the platform of sattva, which is very favorable for attaining liberation. But being in the platform of sattva in itself is not liberation. Now, the predominance of rajas and tamas in the mind, ego and intelligence does not allow these instruments to filter external experience properly. So Purusha receives unfiltered, contaminated experiences and ignorantly thinks it is suffering the pain and misery reflected by the intelligence, reflected by the intellect. Sankhya views Prakriti as a compassionate mother that provides everything to Purusha that he needs to understand his true nature, distinct from Prakriti in her manifested and unmanifested state. Prakriti manifests herself out of compassion for Purusha. Just see. Now, what is the position of Purusha before liberation? That is not explained. Before creation. Before creation, they talk about Prakriti, Prakriti, Prakriti. But what was Purusha doing before creation? No explanation. What does Purusha do? No explanation. Now we have a clear expression. There, the souls who are bound, they stay in the stomach of Mahavishnu. There is no talking about Mahavishnu. Where were the Purushas? Where are the souls? No answer. Prakriti manifests herself out of compassion for the Purushas, just as the mother's milk is produced out of compassion for the child, unless it is somehow contaminated. The milk of the mother's breast is always helpful for the child. And likewise, the evolute of Prakriti are helpful for Purusha unless they are contaminated with the predominance of rajas and tamas, false identification, selfish actions, possessiveness, lack of discrimination. These are general descriptions. Prakriti and Purusha are infinite and eternal. And Prakriti is in her unmanifested state. She is also intermingled with Purusha. That is to become with Purusha, that he becomes anxious to realize his own true nature. Now they say that before cosmic manifestation manifested, now Prakriti and Purusha were together. And Purusha was thinking, I want to realize myself. Again the Vedans say that Purusha is now uncontaminated before the creation happened, according to the Sankhyas. If that is the case, where did the desire came from to realize himself? What he wants to realize? He is already uncontaminated according to Sankhyas. We will all see later these points. Thus Purusha initiates the manifestation of the universe, and thus Prakriti helps Purusha realize himself as distinct from her. But when through ignorance Purusha forgets his purpose in coming closer to Prakriti, then indeed, discriminating himself from the unconscious principle, he entangles himself with it. The moment he remembers his purpose and discriminates himself from its unmanifested world and form, and from its cause, he realizes his true nature and recognizes his freedom. Just as a chef continues cooking until the food is cooked, and stops the moment it is ready, so Purusha continues to flow in the current of life until his purpose is fulfilled. The moment the highest goal of life, realization, is attained, he stops flowing that current. Likewise, a dancer performing to entertain her audience continues until the audience are satisfied. The moment the course of dance is fulfilled, the dancer stops her dance. In the same way, the great dancer Prakriti continues her dance until her discrimination function is accomplished. The moment she accomplishes her job, she withdraws herself back into her unmanifested state. The purpose of manifestation of Prakriti is to show herself to Purusha so that he can realize that he is distinct from her. The moment Purusha realizes that he is not the central external object, then the entire manifestation is withdrawn. Now they go on trying text. These are all commentaries given by the Sankhya Karikas and all. They say the purpose of Prakriti is just to help Purusha to realize that he is not Prakriti. Anyway, these are all sankets they say, just see. In actuality, pure consciousness, Purusha, is subject neither bondage to liberation. Because he is never really in bondage. The concept of bondage and liberation, pain and suffering, are results of ignorance or false understanding. Prakriti binds herself with the rope of her manifestation. When Purusha recognizes her as distinct from him, she liberates herself. And as previously been stated, there are 8 attributes of Mahat or Buddhi, which is the prime evolute of Prakriti. These 8 are attachment and detachment, vice and virtue, non-meritoriousness and meritoriousness actions, ignorance and knowledge. Prakriti binds herself with first 7 attributes and liberates herself with the 8th, the light of knowledge. Thus, bondage and liberation are both concepts of intellect. Though the practice of yoga of discrimination, that is, the repeated affirmation of non-identification of the body, sense and mind, I am not the experiencer. The Sankhyas, they say, constantly should not say, I am not the experiencer. Somebody kicks you, say, I am not the experiencer, I am not being kicked. Something like that. I am not the doer. Non-identification of the body, sense and mind, one polishes one's intellect and becomes more consciously aware of one's true nature. This true knowledge or understanding leads one to the state of freedom from all confusion and false identification. Thus one attains knowledge of the true self. After the self realizes its true nature, all anxieties are dissolved. Then the self becomes disinterested in seeing Prakriti, and Prakriti becomes disinterested in showing herself. Both happen simultaneously. Because she has seen and has purpose, and her purpose has been fulfilled, Prakriti and Purusha are both infinite and all-pervading and are therefore eternally together, like two sides of the same coin, but with their purpose is fulfilled, the process manifestation ceases. So it's like a story, it's like a picture, movie. When you go to a movie, actually you don't have to go to a movie. When you go to a movie, you start seeing, oh, I'm the hero, oh, he's a villain, he's beating me. You get involved in the movie. And after some time, movie is over, you come out. So why at all you went to the movie? Nobody knows. So
it does feel like this, that the Prakriti is conscious, the way we are.
Yes. That is how they they just go on talking about all these things. Now they talk about 2 kinds of mukti. Jivan mukti, sajiva mukti, and videha mukti. In Sankhya philosophy, there are 2 kinds of liberation, Jivan Mukti and Videha Mukti. Liberation attained in one's lifetime is called Jivan Mukti. Like we say, Jivan Muktasya Uchchate. In this kind of liberation, a person continues existence on the platform as a liberated being. He lives in the world, enjoys worldly objects until he casts off the body. He continues his journey through the worldly life just as a fan continues to revolve due to its previously generated speed for a short while after it's been switched off. When all sanskars, the impressions of past actions are finished, then he casts off his body and is set to enter into the Videha Mukti, which is liberation after death. Anyhow, the concept of God. I don't want to talk much about it because in the Sankhya, original Sankhya Sutras, he has clearly so told we don't require God. Anyhow, they are atheist. Anyhow, they are atheistic people. But there's a problem. The problem was, there are many questions raised. How can Prakriti and Purusha combine together? Based on that, there are so many questions raised. How Prakriti can be called God is because unconscious. Can be the creator because it's unconscious. Then they were forced to accept some God. Later, philosophers. So it's a very interesting argument which goes here. Earliest available text of Nirishwara Sankhya, the Sankhya Karika, does not discuss the existence of God at all. The existence of any reference to God led to the postponement of this proponents of this system to conclude that the earlier Samkhya philosophers did not accept the existence of God. They argued that because the entire universe is a system of cause and effect, it could not be caused by God because by definition God is eternal and immutable. According to Samkhya's, see, God, if at all, he is there. He is eternal, immutable, and he doesn't involve in any of these things. If he involves, then he is not God. That which is unchanging cannot be active cause of anything. So the ultimate cause of the universe is eternal, but ever changing. That cause is Prakriti. Because when you say this Satkaryavada, Satkaryavada means, the Sankhets say, now this world has a cause, and the cause has changed. Because Parinama, Parinamavada, Parinama means change. The Upanishads say, God doesn't change. So, even though God is there, he has nothing to do with the creation, nothing to do with this world. Let him be there, we don't want him. Because if God is there and Parinamavada is accepted, then God is subject to change. So better accept Prakriti changes. Now this is where the Gaudiya Vaishnavas explain this point. We accept the Parinamavada. It is true that there is transformation of a thing to this world. But what is the thing which is transformed? It is not God who is transforming. It is the energy of God which is transforming. So the problem which the Sankhets faced because of Parinamavada, the solution came up in the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. The problem is what? According to the Sankhets, we don't want to accept God because God is unchangeable. According to the philosophy, there should be change. Change cannot be attributed to God. So we don't want God. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas say, no, there is God, there is Krishna is there, and Krishna's energy changes. So Shakti Parinamavad came into picture. So, but because there are many Purushas, now, the argument is like this. In reply to this, one could argue that the Prakriti is non-intelligent, must therefore be controlled and directed by some intelligent principle in order to produce universe. Okay, Prakriti is unintelligent and unconscious. There should be some intelligence to control. Now, Sankhets say, no, it is the Purusha. Purusha means you accept there are many souls. So, many souls all together came to a conclusion and gave the same instruction. So, they say that in order to produce the universe, but because there are many Purushas, they cannot guide and lead the infinite all-providing Prakriti. So, one must therefore conclude that there is God. But this is not possible. The proponents of the non-theistic Sankhya reply, because the act of controlling and guiding Prakriti means to do something or to be active. In addition, if God controls Prakriti, then what inspires God to make her create our world full of pain and misery? Moreover, one cannot say that God has desires because desires imply implications, which is the quality of which is a quality God cannot have. Therefore, there is no such thing as God. Purusha is sufficient. Actually, the wording is not. They don't say there is no such thing as God. The word Ishwarena Siddhe, it can be told no such thing as God. But ultimately, it implies so. They say we don't require God to explain creation. That's what they want to say. So, Purusha is sufficient to inspire the unconscious Prakriti manifest herself in the form of universe. Now, going further, later, a section of Sankhya philosophers were persuaded, the word is used here, to accept the existence of God. In debates, these atheistic opponents, they found it very difficult, to explain the creation without including a supreme being in their system. Later on, they put God, okay, now we also are godly. One logical weakness of Nirvishesha Sankhya that attracts with theist is a brief in many Purushas, but how only one Prakriti? What is one Purusha or all Purusha together they inspired Prakriti or manifest? All Purushas inspired Prakriti to manifest? If only one, Then creation occurred against the wish of other. Okay, only one Purusha had a wish. There should be creation. Then this one Purusha, creation happened against the wish of many Purushas, many souls. Then there must be same communication agreement among all the Purushas. But there is no record of a cosmic conference of all the Purushas. The cosmic conference one, to make such decision. Therefore, there must be Supreme Being who guides Prakriti immediately. That's the conference of all Purushas. So they were forced, later commentators. In this way, we finish Sankhya. Let us see refutation of Sankhya philosophy. I am not giving the Bhagavatam verses because the papers were short and it became for. I just mentioned the numbers, that's all. In three places in the Vedanta Sutra book, Sankhyas are refuted. In the first phase, in the first chapter, first pada, 5th till the 11th verse. 5th verse to the 11th verse. Sankhya is refuted in what sense? In all the Vedas, Brahman is knowable. In all the Vedas, Brahman is knowable. That is what is established. But the Sankhya says, Prakriti is the cause and it is knowable. Janmadhya Sataha. It is very first few. Janmadhyasyataha. Atato brahma jigyasa. Janmadhyasyataha. Shastra yonitvat. Ekam tattvipradhavudha vadanti. Tattva samanvayat. So in this way, the next one is this. The sutras. Let us see. The absolute truth is knowable and can be described in words. Now, these Sankhyas, in one place they told, even if God is there, later commentators of Sankhya, one place they told that Brahman is anirvachaniya. Anirvachaniya means who cannot be described by words. You cannot be described by words. So answering this, the Vedantists, they say, the absolute truth is knowable and can be described by words. Because some Sankhyas, they say, oh, God is there but is not knowable, it cannot be described, so better not talk about it. And better not try to understand him. If he is not knowable, if it is not describable, why talk? Isn't it? So many people like that. See, you cannot see God and you cannot talk to him. You cannot do anything about him. So why talk about him? Anyway, it's unattainable. Let us just do our work here and then be happy. So that is the reason in the beginning of the Vedanta Sutra itself, this section is spoken. That the absolute Brahman is knowable. That is why unless you know, you cannot describe. Unless you describe, you cannot meditate on. That is why. Satyam param dhimahi. I meditate. Meditate on whom? Satyam param. Who is the absolute truth. And not only is the absolute truth, he has got qualities and the characteristics of Janmadhyasthita. Tene brahmurudaya adhikave. Who is Uhyanti, Surayaha. These are all the secondary characteristics of absolute truth. So who says God cannot be described? God can be described. So it is not that God cannot be described. So this is the section which talks about that particular point. The absolute truth, the self of all, is not Saguna Brahman. Now, this word Saguna Brahman is Prakriti. Prakriti is Saguna Brahman. Now, Sankhya accepted this prakriti which is saguna brahman, saguna means the brahman which has got sattva rajas tama as god. So saguna brahman is not god, prakriti is not god. Why? The scriptures clearly say nirgunam gunabhoktucha. Brahman is nirguna, has been established in the Vedas. How did the Sankhyas accept the saguna brahman prakriti as the source, as God? The absolute truth is nirguna brahman because his worship gives liberation. Now, when we talk of liberation, if saguna brahman is God, then what? God himself doesn't have liberation. You know, he also bound. So he is also seeking for liberation. So if you are worshipping somebody, some God, who himself is bound, how will you deliver, how he can deliver you? So it is the nirguna brahman who is the absolute truth. And who is that nirguna brahman? Nirguna brahman means Vishnu. Nirguna means who is not bound by the modes. Why? How is he Vishnu? Because the Vedic literatures clearly explain that the nirguna brahman is all pervading. Vishati naha iti Vishnu. One who cannot be obstructed from entering into any place. He is known as Vishnu. That means one who is everywhere. Vishati means to enter. So if somebody has to enter president's quarters, he will be obstructed. If you have to enter into this microphone, you cannot enter. And Vishnu can enter everywhere, but that is present in a different way, in the sense that one who cannot be stopped entering anywhere, he can enter everywhere, he is entered everywhere. Andantarastha paramanu chayantastham. So he is Vishnu. The supreme control of the three modes of nature. In the Vedas, there is no higher worship than the worship of Vishnu. So you should worship him, because only those who are beyond, the persons beyond the modes can deliver you. Vishnu is a complete whole. He is Purna. He is not Apurna. Because as soon as somebody is Apurna, incompleteness is there, he can be bound. Vedas describe only one absolute truth, Vasudeva. The Supreme Lord is devoid of material qualities. These are some of the sutras which says Nirguna Brahman of Sankhyas should not be accepted, and God has to be attained, can be attained, can be described. And actually Vedanta Sutra in the beginning itself, in the very beginning itself, Sankhya philosophers have been made shut down, because their proposition, God cannot be described. Just because they don't describe God, that doesn't mean others cannot describe. So Vedanta says, yes, Brahman can be described, God can be described. Now going further, the atheistic Sankhya philosophy says it's wrong for the Vedantists to contradict their scriptures. But in fact, their scriptures are wrong because they contradict the Vedic explanation of creation. Now, this is from the second chapter, first pada and first verse and second verse, two verses, two sutras. Now, the atheistic Sankhya philosophers say it is wrong for the Vedantists to contradict their scriptures. Why the Sankhyas have objection like this? They say, these Vedantists, they say God has transformed into this world. At the same time, they say God is not transformable, he is unchangeable. How did he change into this world? That is the biggest objection the Sankhyas pose unto us. Because we say God became this world. But we know God emanated energies, and the energies transformed into the world. God did not have any transformation. His energies got transformed. That they don't know. Now, the Vedantists, they say, Sankhyas, they contradict their own scriptures. But in fact, their scriptures are wrong because they contradict the Vedic explanation of creation. Now the Sankhya says, we accept Veda. But in Veda, it is clearly explained that creation is done by conscious, intelligent, independent God, not by Prakriti. So in this way, Shripad Madhvacharya, in one line he says, the Sankhyas are non-Vedic. They say we are Vedic, but they are non-Vedic on one point, on one specific point. There are many points. One specific point is, the Sankhyas, they accept Prakriti as the creator. And Purusha and Prakriti combined together on their own. Nowhere in the Vedas it is mentioned. Whereas Vedas say God created this world. That is why they are non-Vedic. They are against the Shrutis. Now the details of the Sankhya being refuted. Let us see. It is from the second chapter, second pada, first verse onwards to 10th verse. Yesterday I gave from the 11th, that is for the Nyaya Vaisheshikas. The first 10 defeats Sankhya. The Pradhana, unmanifest material energy, being unconscious and therefore unintelligent, cannot be the creator of this universe. This is the first thing. See, creation requires intentionality, intention. There should be intention behind it. Why I am doing? So intention cannot be in unconscious Prakriti. Unconscious Prakriti. So it requires intention and also intelligence to create. So it is not there. Intelligence is not there. Intention or consciousness is not there. How can it create? Pradhana is inert. Only when consciousness agitates Pradhana do the three modes of nature stir to ignite this material manifestation. Now, Pradhana is inert, so only consciousness can agitate it. How can Pradhana itself become agitated? Now, they may say, no, these Jiva Purushas, they are agitating. Now, we already heard about it. How can many people control one Pradhana? Many Purushas controlling one Pradhan is impossible. Controller can only be one. If there are many controllers on the same platform, it will be big chaos. Like you have 5 co-presidents in the temple, what will happen? 5 co-presidents are non-pujari. Something like that. So, you have many Purushas and one Pradhan, which are whom should he listen to? This is another fallacy. Though it appears that the material elements spontaneously interact to produce new effects, as when water produces sap, as milk produces curd, these creations are guided by higher agencies. Similarly, the cosmic creation is not produced by Pradhana's spontaneous interaction. It is directed by a higher agency. This we discussed. They give the examples. Here only one example is given. That is, milk produces curd. Water produces sap. Milk produces curd. I gave the example of blind man and lame man, magnet and iron. There are many examples which they give. But we have refuted all the examples in that. How you require intelligence everywhere. Even though milk transforms to curd, somebody has made it. Even though you may say that camel carrying saffron. There is somebody who wanted saffron, that is, the camel is carrying. The atheistic Sankhya philosophers may argue that Pradhana is the sole cause of the universe, but in fact, their theory states that Pradhana creates only when Purusha is near. Thus, even the Sankhya standpoint holds that matter does not create alone. Now, there is a big confusion in the Sankhyas. Even among their commentators, one commentator says Pradhana itself is capable of creation. And some commentators say, no, Purusha Pradhana, like husband wife, would create. Because in any decision when any family takes, husband and wife together take. So they themselves are confused about it. So thus even the Sankhya standpoint holds that the matter does not act alone. So by their own assertment, consciousness is required to agitate matter, pradana, to create. So why derive consciousness from living entities? Accept that the consciousness is derived from the conscious supreme living being. And why don't you accept it? That's the point. Atheistic Sankhya philosophers put forward examples of various creative interactions of material elements to support their theory that pradana is the cause. But these examples only speak against their idea. I give those examples. Those examples can be found in this sutra. The atheistic Sankhya philosophers claim pradana offers herself to the individual soul to enjoy, thus entice the souls fall under her power. And after their material desires are completely satisfied, the souls are liberated by pradana only. But in fact, the Supreme Lord is the only controller of the material nature, living entities and their desires. So now, the atheistic Sankhya philosopher claims that the individual soul try to enjoy, enticed by pradana. Now their argument is, now, pradana first entice the souls to get into this world, and the same pradana is liberating. What is this? Now, first pradana attracted the souls, again liberated. It is meaningless. The atheistic Sankhya philosopher argued that material nature acts when it is near the consciousness of the living entity, like a piece of iron that moves when attracted by a near magnet. I give this example also. But matter and consciousness of the jivas are moved by the Supreme Lord who is above them. So there is a Supreme Lord who actually controls the movement. Okay, magnet attracts iron. Well and good. Why doesn't attract wood? That means there is somebody who is making sure that magnet attracts only iron, not wood. So there is a controller. There is an intelligent controller. Atheistic Sankhya philosopher admits pradana to be the matter in equilibrium when the three modes are balanced. It does not explain why the modes stir out of the balanced state, sitting off the process of creation. It accepts neither that it is initiated by the Supreme Lord nor even by the time factor. The Sankhya explanation of causation is thus incomplete. So, time factor is not accepted by... Time energy is agitating matter, of course, along with the conscious jivas, which is coming out from the eyes of Mahavishnu, that did not accept this thing. So, without accepting time factor, their philosophy is incomplete. It is illusion to think that three modes of material nature act separately from the power of the Supreme Intelligent Personality of Godhead. Here, there is a verse in the Shvetashvara Upanishad. Are you given that verse or not? In the today's thing, did I give? Not that. Oh, it's there in another page. Okay, famous verse. We all know that verse. It is one line of the verse. I'll only quote that one line because I don't know the previous two lines. Pradhana Kshetrajna Patir Gunesha. In the 13th chapter, another purport, Prabhupada quote this verse. Pradhana Kshetrajna Patir Gunesha. So now God has been termed as Gunesha. Gunesha means the controller of modes. And now here the Sankhyas don't accept the Supreme Lord as the controller of modes. The modes are there. Sattvaguna, Rajaguna, Tamaguna is there. Who is controlling them? Who is giving these qualities to them? No. Gunesha. And is Pradhana Kshetrajna? He is a Supreme Kshetrajna. Patir Gunesha. He is the Pati and Gunesha. Gunesha that is not accepted by them. And then next, last. The atheistic Sankhya philosophers is fraught with many contradictions. The Sankhya philosophers do not clearly explain whether the living entity is conscious or unconscious, or why the living entity is bound to or liberated from matter. There is no reason why the living entity or the Purusha, gets combined with Prakriti to create this world. And why at all he should get liberated? If he thinks, I want to get liberated because of misery with Prakriti, why at all he came in contact with Prakriti? So these things have no explanation in the Sankhya philosophy. So this is how it is explained. That is why Srila Vyasadev in this particular sutra 2 to 10 viprattishedaccha samanyan asamanjasam asamanjasam. The word used here is asamanjasam. That is why vipranishedaccha asamanjasam. Vipra means great learned truth, panditas, great scholars. They give up this Sankhya. They don't accept this Sankhya because of asamanjasam. And how to explain this word asamanjasam? In South Indian language, you have this asamanjasam. Asamanjas. In Telugu, we speak this. Means it's very uncomfortable. You know. It is like when for example, there are many Matajis sitting here and making some garlands and then talking and gossiping in themselves. And there is something on the table like this here. Somebody sends a new devotee, a brahmachari. Hey, go to that room and get the laptop. And he comes here. And he feels like asamanjasam. Where did I come like that? There's a feeling that's called asamanjasam. Isn't it? So, see, what is this going on? That's called asamanjasam. That's a feeling. So, when you hear this Sankhya philosophy, they feel, hey, what is this happening? What are they talking about? You got the thing? We get this feeling, you know, what are they talking about? What's happening? I just don't want to be here. That kind of thing. Asamanjasam. So ultimately, like Vyasa, regarding Nyaya Vaisheshikas, what did he say? Atyanta nirapeksha. It should be completely discarded. Now here he says in a more sophisticated way, what these people are speaking? What is this Sankhya philosophy? So I don't even want to hear about it. I don't want to talk about it. Let's go. That's what Vyasa says. Asamanjasam. So, Sankhya philosophy is over. We have buried it. Yesterday, Nyaya Vaisheshikas, we have made a tomb. Now, we have Nyaya Sankhya is now buried by this word, Asamanjasam. Okay. So tomorrow, we'll take up yoga. So, everybody do yoga morning. It's another. Yoga is a friend of Sankhya. Like Vaisheshika and Nyaya are both are friends. Almost share many things. And yoga and Sankhya share many things. Many things. That is why we will not take much time for yoga. And then start our dear enemy, Mayavad, also tomorrow evening. No, not enemy. Tomorrow, karma. Karma Mamsa. We'll try to start tomorrow evening. Let's see how we can do that. Karma. Yoga can finish tomorrow. Means you want to say that absolute truth cannot be described by words. No, that is what I told. See. Where is it? Yeah. The absolute truth is knowable and can be described in words. That is what we say. That is what Vedanta says.
She says in the 11th canto, there is some statement to say.
In the 11th canto, you should bring the Praman for it. We will show. We'll bring. of course, cannot be described completely because he is indescribable, indescribable in the sense that completely, that may be there, but that is how the way Vedanta starts. This is actually the first aphorism of real Vedanta. Before that, it is only just satada brahma jigyasa, now you should be inquired and all. But the real thing starts from this only. It is just a fifth sutra of the Vedanta. Before the previous four, they are only just talking about you should inquire, you should be inquisitive. Now enough of human life, enough of dharma. Dharma will also not give liberation to you. So they talk about all these things, but now the real thing starts. Yes, that is why I am describing. Otherwise, why Veda? Why describe? Why talk? Ha. See, Vedeshu durlabham madurlabham atma bhaktau Vedesha sarve raham evedyo. Both are contradictory. Bhagavata Krishna says, Vedesha sarve aham eva vedya. From all the Vedas, who is to be known? I am to be known. In other place, he says, Brahma says, Vedeshu durlabham. Now, how do you resolve the contradiction? You can resolve the contradiction by seeing Vedesh Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhaktau. So when you study the Veda with Bhakti, then only I can get. By Veda you cannot get. But when you add Bhakti to Veda and make Bhakti Vedanta, then you get. That means mercy. Even though you have Veda, without my mercy you cannot know. Like in the Bhagavatam it is said, Chiram vichinnam, what is that words? Leshanu grihita evahi, janati tattvam bhagavan mahimno. What is that words? Full words. Symptoms of old age. So, what is that words? Leshanu grihita evahi, janati. You can only know Krishna when there is mercy of Krishna. Lesha anugraha. And the anugraha of Krishna is that then only you can know. So, there is Veda, description about Krishna. And by reading Veda, which is description about Krishna, you cannot understand Krishna. While reading Veda with devotion, you get the mercy of Krishna by which you can understand Krishna. Maybe you are talking about that point of understanding the Lord. The understanding of the Lord is different from not the Lord cannot be described. There is a difference between that. Lord can be described. No. You have a verse book? Anybody has a verse book? You can see that. You can see the words. Where it quick. Sarvamatachari. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quotes Sarvamatachari. Says, oh Lord, Machet Sarvamatachari says that mercy of Krishna is there on you. That is why you are able to understand. Athapite deva padambujadvaya prasadanishana grihita evahi janadittvam bhagavan mahimno nachanyat chiro chiram vichinnam. Something comes like that. A very famous verse. Athapite deva padambujadvaya. You have anybody has verse book? See that very nice verse from the Bhagavatam. Thapite de padam bujadvaya prasadaleshan agrihita evahi janati tattvam bhagavan nahino achanye teko pichiram pichinnam. That's verse. So, Srimad Bhagavatam was written. No. See, Vyasa and Krishna, they were samakalikas. One thing is they were together. See, Vyasa appeared just before Krishna appeared. Because Vyasa's Satyavati, mother Satyavati, got married to Shantanu, and they got children, Vichitravirya and Chitrangada. They did not live long. They died very fast. They did not have children. So Vyasa was called to produce children from Ambika and Ambalika. So it is not very long, maybe maximum 100 years. Ambika and Ambalika, they gave birth to Pandu and Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra and Pandu died earlier. She was just about maybe 20, 25, something like that. So Vyasa, if you take Pandu's age plus Vichitravirya's age, and maybe 50 years more, Pandu's age 25, Vichitravirya is also something like the same, similar, and maybe about 50 years before you can take, that is the time you can take. There is no, in the Vedic situation, study, chronology is not such an important thing. The knowledge in the subject is more important. That is why in the Vedas, they don't give much of chronology. They don't give much importance to chronology. Sometimes, some instances which happened before, they are mentioned later. Some instances which happened after, they mentioned later. The chronology is not such a very... For the modern Indologists and the historians, chronology is a big thing. But in the Vedic thing, chronology is... Because how can you judge chronology when you talk of kalpas? Previous kalpa, that kalpa. You cannot talk about it. And that is there. That is it. But the Bhagavatam, when Vyasa put it into writing in Samyaprasa, after Narada instructed him, that definitely happened after Krishna manifested. Hey, Vedanta Sutras, he might solve whatever it is. That verse is there. It definitely talks about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and coming. And in the future as Krishna. Krishna coming as Chaitanya. Okay. We completed three big days.